I'm Brian Gibberman with thepodiumgame.com, and our first round playoff preview continues in the Western Conference with the Rockets-Mavs series. The first round series in the Western Conference that has the closest proximity is the Mavericks versus Rockets series. The Rockets are the 2 seed, the Mavs are the 7 seed. Game 1 is Saturday night on ESPN at 9:30 p.m. on ESPN. Nice enough to join us to help us take care of the Rockets side is Jared Dubin. Jared, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
I'm doing well. Now, just a precursor to this, Ethan Rothstein from SB Nation's TheDreamShake.com did the Rockets side. My computer crapped out right after I did it, so I lost that portion. So Jared was nice enough to fill in. All right, Ethan was pretty confident about this series. He thought the Rockets matched up really well with Mavericks. Do you agree with him?
I do agree. I'm not, hugely enamored with Dallas's defense. And, they've got the injury issue with Chandler Parsons, too. One thing I do think needs to be considered is, that the Mavericks are coached by Rick Carlisle. They made a series against the Spurs last year closer than they had any business making it, because Carlisle came up with a whole bunch of, creative different things that he was going to do. They started switching pick and rolls on Tony Parker. Sean Marion guarded him a bunch, and they even had, their big guys stepping out and guarding him at times. And I would expect that he'll unveil something creative to stop James Harden, too. So much of Houston's offense is James Harden sort of attacking straight from the top. And you got to think that Carlisle will come out with something different that they haven't necessarily shown in the 4 regular season matchups in order to counteract what Harden does.
And they went, I think the regular season, I should have had that. No, I didn't write it down for this one.
Houston won the season series 3-1.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure, I have to double check, I'm pretty sure Dallas was on the back end of a back-to-back in all 4 games.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Jeez, yeah, that's quite the scheduling quirk. Do you think Houston needs to diversify their offense at all now that the playoffs are around for it to be effective, or do you think they're okay kind of rolling along with what they do all the time?
I mean, I think they're okay. Dwight only played one of those games too, the Houston-Dallas games. So that's another thing that happened. I just looked that up while we were talking.
Multitasker.
Yeah. In terms of the variety, I think you saw last year that it can be stopped a little bit due to that, and that showed in their series against Portland last season. Dallas isn't quite as good defensively, I don't think, as that Portland team was, even though defense was that one team's weakness, if you could say they had one, in addition to their depth. But, the variety is a little bit of an issue, but the thing I think is a little bit overblown is people saying, what's James Harden going to do when those fouls go away in the playoffs? Foul drawing is a skill, and he's the best in the league at it. That's for a reason. He knows exactly what he's doing. And I think that helps mitigate some of the lack of variety of it, just because he's so good at that one thing that generates easy points. Obviously they're going to have Dwight back, which wasn't true for the first 3 regular season matchups between these 2 teams. And while they won't have Monty Yunus, they are going to have Terrence Jones. So I think that the variety is definitely an issue, but it's not something that's going to kill their offense.
Can you get away with, in the playoffs, your 2 best offensive creators being Harden and then Josh Smith?
Yeah. Harden is so good at creating offense, and not just for himself. He's so underrated as a passer. And same with Smith. I think I saw, Goldsberry had those posts about, the guys that created the most corner threes. And Josh Smith was within the top 5, and he only spent about half the season with the Rockets. He's such a good passer. And, you know, it gets overshadowed by the fact that he does so many other things offensively that aren't necessarily desirable. But, you know, Harden is a genius-level passer, too. You know, I do think it's a little bit of a problem for them that there's not really a secondary perimeter creator that can take defenses off the dribble and bend them. You know, and then they're missing Beverly, too, who's a valuable part of their offense. But there's a lot of different things to consider with that offense. It's not just, you know, everybody fixates on that they only take threes, layups, and free throws. But a lot of what's important about that is the way they get the, you know, Harden attacks straight to the rim. They want a lot of pick and roll. Even when Dwight's on there and they post him up, he's right next to the basket. And even though he's not a great passer, when he does kick out a pass, they usually wind up with a three out of it.
Are you okay? I was going to say, are you okay with the Terry Prigioni combo at point guard? Do you think they can get away with that because of Harden's vast skills?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think a lot of it might depend on how Dallas decides to match up defensively. You know, if they're going to put Monte on one of those guys instead of Rondo, obviously their job offensively becomes much easier. You know, and then Rondo maybe slides over to Harden. But I think that the bigger challenge for those two guys is probably going to come on the other end, especially because they don't have, you know, the protection from Harden that they do offensively, because Harden's not the greatest defender in the world either. And, you know, while Rondo's not necessarily a guy that's going to try to push the ball all the way to the basket, he's such a different kind of guard to deal with than you're used to. So it'll be interesting to see how Terry and Prigioni respond on that side.
If the Rockets don't win this round, do you think Mikal deserves to get fired?
I wouldn't say anyone ever deserves to get fired. You know, I don't like advocating for people to lose their jobs. I do like imagining hypothetical scenarios and whether a team might be better off with someone else. And I think it's a question worth asking, you know, whether they win or not. You know, obviously, Mikal has sort of bought into, you know, the way that Morey wants the team to play offense, but it's not necessarily his first choice. He's been open about that, and it might be interesting to see what they could do with someone who is more of a, you know, a spread offense, threes and layups, not a lot of post up kind of guy. But who's the guy that you'd be thinking would be good for them? I'm curious.
Oh, that, well, I didn't, come on now. Now you're putting me on the spot. I didn't go that far ahead. That's a great question. You need someone that would keep the autonomy between the front office and the general and the coaching staff. I think that's, and the D League, like, they all do the same thing. So I think it'd be very important to have someone who would buy into what they were doing. Basically, the genesis of that question was when I asked Ethan who would catch the blame if the Rockets lost in the first round, and he, without hesitation, said Mikal.
Yeah, I mean, Mikal would definitely be on the list. Injuries would, too. You know, Beverly and Modiunas were big parts of what they were doing, especially defensively. You know, Modiunas had become a really good post-up option this season. I think when he went out, he might have been the most efficient post-up player in the league, you know, with a minimum of a certain amount of post-ups. If he wasn't, he was up there. But the work he did defensively, especially filling in for Dwight, you know, that was really important for them. You know, they still have Smith and Terrence Jones there, but I thought Modiunas did really good work. So injuries, I think, be a factor that gets blamed either along with or instead of McKay.
You have anything you would like to plug before getting out of here?
Yeah, I have something that I've been working on for a while. I'm not sure when it's going to come out. I'm not writing it yet. But it'll be at the Cauldron. I don't want to say too much about what it is, but I've been working on it for most of the season, and I talked to about 35 different coaches and players around the league about one specific subject, sort of like I did with the pregame warm-ups last year, and that'll be coming out pretty soon, I think.
That sounds very cool, so make sure to keep an eye on Jared's Twitter feed. I'm sure it will be out. He'll tweet it out, and you'll be able to see that sometime in the near future. Jared, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We go from red in the state of Texas to blue. Now we touch on the Mavericks. We have Bobby Corella from Mavs.com, MavsOutsiders.com, and BballBreakdown.com. Bobby, how you doing today?
I'm good, Brian. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. So what is the latest on Chandler Parsons and Devin Harris?
Well, Harris is going to be ready to go, that's for sure. You said that before the Mavs regular season finale. You said if it was playoffs, he'd be fine. Parsons' status is more a little up in the air. There have been kind of some conflicting reports coming out of Dallas lately where one day, you know, he says he feels great. The next day, he said he got a setback. And then he had a nice workout yesterday before the Portland game. He didn't play. But he was running up and down shooting. He said he felt fine afterward. So I've kind of felt all along that if it was the playoffs, he'd be playing. But, you know, there's all sorts of gamesmanship going on in the media during the playoffs, whether it's a coach talking, a player talking, about the officials, about the opponent, whatever. So I don't really know what to believe, but my suspicion is that he will play and be ready for game one.
Well, so what's the impact of having either not having Parsons at all, having him at less than 100%, or having him full tilt? How does that change around what the Mavs are doing?
I think having him, whether or not he's at 100%, is a huge boost for the Mavs offense simply because he's the only guy on the team that can shoot the three, drive the ball, and create for others consistently and reliably. Monte Ellis has been up and down from three this season, especially since the All-Star break. He's really struggled in that aspect. But Parsons, just with his size, he's 6'10", with his foot speed, with his ball handling ability. I mean, he's such a threat offensively, and that would require Houston to put Ariza on him, whether or not he's 100%. That gives Monte sort of more free rein offensively to take James Harden off the dribble or do whatever he wants. So simply by having Parsons on the floor, it gives Houston something to think about, whereas his replacement, Richard Jefferson, he's a really good three-point shooter too, but he's not as dangerous off the bounce, which can kind of, it affects the way that teams play defense. So I think having Parsons, you know, even if he's 75-80%, obviously if he's healthy enough to play, that's what matters most. But even if he's out there, I think it works wonders for the Mavericks for spacing reasons, for breaking down the defense. You know, he's so good at hanging out on the weak side and then breaking the defense down once it's already broken down. You know, he is not going to beat you off that initial rotation, but he'll beat you off the second one. And that's what the Mavericks have missed without him, and that's what he can provide to the team if he's on the floor.
Now, these two players, they deserve their own questions, but my question for both of them is the same thing. Do Dirk and Rondo have another gear they can get to in this postseason, or do you think they've kind of flatlined?
Well, I'll start with Dirk. Last year was a rough series for him. Thiago Splitter has the size and strength to guard Dirk. You know, he's one of the only guys in the league that can really defend Dirk both inside and out. And Houston doesn't have that guy. Donatas Mateunas is, you know, big enough to guard him, but he's obviously out for the season. So it's going to be Terrence Jones and Josh Smith guarding Dirk, which is a huge size advantage for Dirk. You know, obviously those guys are quicker, but they're not as strong. They're not going to be able to contest his shot. They're not going to be able to do the types of things that you need to do to just remove Dirk from the equation. So I think simply by going up against guys that are smaller than him, Dirk is going to have a little bit of an easier path, especially, you know, more so than he did last year. So I think that he will kick it up an extra gear. As far as Rondo goes, offensively, I mean, who's to say? You know, it just comes down to if his jump shot is falling that day. But defensively, I really like him as a matchup for Harden. Harden this season averaged below 25 a game against the Mavs, which, you know, whatever, I guess, good job there. But he averaged almost 28 a game, so, you know, they held him to 3 points below a season average. Rondo had a lot to do with that. He's long enough. He's got a 6'9 wingspan, so he's long enough to stay in front of Harden. He can contest his shot. He can do all of those little things, making Harden work a little bit more, making it a little more difficult for him to catch a pass, to get the ball. So while playoff Rondo, the mythical beast that we've all heard of for the last few months, while he might not, you know, show up in the box score, I think all the little things that he does collectively will add up, and I think that, you know, that it could definitely make an impact in the series. I mean, a lot rests on him.
Do you think the team's been better with him?
The team's been different with him. I don't know if the team's been better. You know, before they got him, they were playing historically good offense, and whether or not that was going to continue is kind of an academic debate. They had a really easy schedule at the beginning of the year, and their schedule basically, starting with the day they got him, they played the Spurs in his first game, and ever since then, their schedule's been brutal. So it's really hard to tell whether they've been better or worse. I mean, the spacing issues are real, and you can't really argue against that. But Rondo gives them defense at the point guard position, which is arguably the most, or at least second most, important defensive position on the floor behind center, or next to center. So now, you know, the Mavericks have a plus defender at point guard and center, which they didn't have before, and they haven't had in three or four seasons. So, I mean, I think that they're a different team, but they're a team that is more capable, in my opinion, of winning a playoff series than the one that they had with Jameer Nelson at point guard.
Right. Tyson's really the only rim protector this team has now. He averaged 2.7 fouls per 36 minutes. It wasn't an issue. Against the Rockets in the regular season, it wasn't an issue. He had 2, 0, 3, and 1 fouls in the games versus that, in all pretty significant chunks of minutes per those games. Can that trend continue in the playoffs? Do you think he's going to be okay?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he's a really good post defender. Per synergy, you know, there aren't many guys that defend post-ups anymore because that's just not a prevalent part of the game. But of guys that defended 100 post-ups, he was the fourth best in terms of point per possession allowed. So that matters against a guy like Dwight, who has 8 post-up possessions per game this season. So, I mean, that's a significant number of possessions. So if Tyson wins that matchup on the inside, obviously, that's a huge boost for Dallas. And I think, you know, Tyson does a really good job of staying vertical, staying on his feet, contesting shots cleanly there. Now, the big question is, can he avoid hacking Harden on his way to the rim? And I think that has as much to do with Rondo as it does with Tyson. If Rondo and Al-Farouq Aminu and Devin Harris and even Monte, if he gets a crack at Harden, if those guys can stay in front of Harden, that leaves Chandler to just contest. All he has to do is stand there and be tall, be big. But if those guys get beat and it's up to Tyson to really step in front of him and try and slow him down, that's where you get active hands, that's where you get guys being out of position, and that's where you get in foul trouble. So, I mean, it's going to be a huge problem for the Mavs if Chandler gets in foul trouble, but I'm not even sure how much Dwight will see in the series. I think that Houston might be better served going 5 out and taking Tyson out of the game, but, I mean, I guess that's something that we'll see in Game 1 or Game 2, and we can find out.
I guess I would put myself in this category. I have kind of ruled the Mavs out. I kind of think the Rockets are going to take this series. Why would you say I am going to be wrong?
Well, I like to think that players decide playoff series. It's held true since basically the beginning of time. Usually the team with the best player is going to, you know, win the series. Obviously upsets happen. Harden, for sure, is the best player in the series. Dwight Howard, when healthy, could be the second-best player. But Carlisle has proved over and over again over the years that he has the coaching ability to elevate his team. He did it last year against the Spurs, who were by far the better team, by far had more talent, by far were deeper, and the Mavs still took them to 7 games. So if Dallas can win one of those first 2 games in Houston and come back home tied at 1-1 or even up 0-2, which is going to be a pretty big long shot, you have to put faith in Carlisle to out-tactic or out-strategize Kevin McHale. I mean, Carlisle's one of the best coaches in the league, so he's going to be able to devise a game plan to put the Mavs in position to be successful, and then ultimately it comes down to execution. And, I mean, Dallas has shown, you know, they're not scoring 125 a game like they did earlier in the year, but they've shown that whenever they're on, they're really, really, really hard to beat. And if you get Parsons, you get Dirk, you get Monte, get Rondo, if 2 of those 4 have good games, the Mavericks are in pretty good shape. And if 2 of those 4 don't play bad, don't have really bad games, the Mavericks are in good shape. Problem is, if Monte's shooting is off and Dirk is off and Rondo is committing turnovers, I mean, whenever the Mavs play bad, they play bad. When they play well, they're really, really good. So if they can come together and if they can win a game and get some momentum going, and if Carlisle can work his magic, his playoff voodoo, then I think the Mavs could stretch this thing out. I don't know if they'll win, but I mean, I think that no matter what, this series is going to go 6 games, especially if the Mavs win 1 in Houston. So we'll just see. I mean, I guess it, like I said, I like to think the players win series, but the Mavs' best hope is that the coach gives them such an edge that the players don't matter.
Anything you would like to plug or get out there?
No, I got stuff at Mavs.com, MavsOutsider.com, active on Twitter at Bobby Corella. It's just my name. And I'm just excited to watch the series and see where it goes.
Yep, we'll check all that out, and we'll definitely be keeping an eye on this series. Bobby, thank you very much. Always appreciate it.